Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
Welcome to Seek Reality. I'm Roberta Grimes, and I'm so glad you could be with us today. One of the fruits of modern afterlife research, and to me the most exciting fruit, is the fact that for the first time in human history, now we know the purpose of human life. All of those we used to think were dead tell us precisely the same thing, and actually Jesus also told us these truths, even though modern Christianity ignores them. It turns out that we come to Earth, and sometimes we try out life on other planets, believe it or not, so we can experience the negativity that does not exist in what we call the afterlife levels, which is where we spend nearly all of our eternal lives. We need to be able to push against negativity in order to strengthen our spiritual muscles. So we come here to grow spiritually. Many researchers now talk about Earth School, and that's not wrong, but it implies an orderly and a standardized process, and none of this is orderly. None of it is standardized. It is customized by us and by our guides who helping us to our very specific needs. So I prefer to think of each lifetime we accept on Earth as something like a trip to a spiritual gym. We strip down to maybe 5% of our vast eternal lives, very much as we would strip down to shorts and a t-shirt for a physical gym, and we plan an aggressive workout on all the most spiritually challenging machines. Illness, financial hardship, the death of a beloved spouse or a child, sometimes war or violence. We eagerly choose to experience the very things that are so awful that make us certain while we're here on Earth that there cannot possibly be a God who loves us. We want bad things to happen to us because that is the most efficient way for us to grow spiritually, and because when we are back home, we crave spiritual growth like every Earth craving put together. And giving us a place where we can grow spiritually seems to be the only reason why the universe even exists at all. Today our guest will be your host. Mine has been a long and patient journey, this spending decades studying the afterlife evidence and the gospel teachings, and eventually, after decades, making sense of it all. And for me, the best part has been discovering that there were other people doing the same research at the same time, maybe less gospels and more afterlife evidence. And that we all came to exactly the same conclusions. To me, that's wonderful validation. But I've been talking for a decade about what I've learned, always thinking these truths about the afterlife and the greater reality were what was most important for you to hear. Because once you know the truth about death, you lose all your fears, all of them, and you're living your life in a vast eternal frame. For a long time, that seemed to be what mattered. But now I realize that what afterlife researchers are learning about the purpose of human life really is the core, the base, and the summit of every bit of our decades of afterlife research. It's what it's all about. These truths are also what Jesus came to teach. They're what the dead tell us they most wish they had known while they were living on Earth. Because, of course, we come in with what my guide calls the forgetful, which is they basically, we agree that we aren't going to know anything from before we were born. And that turns out to be a handicap because we forget why we're here. Well, this is why we're here. Whatever else we do in our lives, the extent to which we have grown spiritually in the end is going to be what matters. So we're going to talk today about spiritual growth, what it is, how it feels, why you should make it a top priority, how achieving it will help you live a better life in this lifetime, even before you graduate back to home. My book about using the teachings of Jesus to grow spiritually is called The Fun of Growing Forever. It details my own journey of spiritual growth, and it explains how you can do it too. You can, believe me, if I can do it, you can do it. I'm hearing now from people who are applying its lessons to their lives. And I answer their questions individually, but since they ask, I have to assume that other people must have the same questions. So what I'd like to do today is give you those answers to the best of my understanding and encourage you to really go for it now. Go for it. Put spiritual growth at the center of your life. Even if you're old, it doesn't take long, and nothing else can possibly make you so completely happy. Let's think about how amazing this really is. Not only can we now know the purpose of human life, the first generation in all of human history that really knows it, but we also can think through how to make it happen for us personally. This is like cribbing on the ultimate test you'll ever take. I'm giving you the cheat sheet. It's not hard. You can do it. And when you get home, you'll be so glad you did. Jesus is not a religious figure. I've told you that repeatedly. He came directly from the genuine God, which is eternal mind, and to tell us all of this stuff and to tell us that when we did finally achieve this for enough of us, we were going to bring the kingdom of God on earth. And he told us that we should be looking for the truth, not just testing what some religious person tells us. He said, ask and it will be given to you. Seek and you will find. Knock and it will be opened to you. For whoever asks receives, and he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks it will be opened. That's Matthew 7:7-8. He told us, go for it too. He also told us that the answer that will eventually come to us is this. If you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. That's John 8:31-32. And that it does in every possible way. Now, one of the things that I'm sure is in your mind or in a lot of people's minds is, well, what about just being a Christian? Here's the problem, and I'll talk about this a little bit more. I just want to make sure that you get the most important part of this. But all religions are based in fear. Nothing Jesus says or does is based in fear. And nothing the dead tell us about God is based in fear. God doesn't judge us. All sorts of things that Jesus told us turn out to be true, and the dead confirm it. But because frankly, Christianity teaches us to fear God. I hate saying that. I loved that religion. I was a Christian for more than 50 years, and I love it still, but I can't even go into a Christian church now because I already immediately feel the fear when I walk in the door. And that's the problem. Now, if you are a Christian and you don't want to give it up, that's fine. Please, though, develop a habit of reading the red letters in the Christian gospel, because the letters on love, forgiveness, the nature of God, the meaning and purpose of our lives, all of those red letters are the truth that Jesus came to teach us. It's packaged in this religion that is not true, but those words certainly are true. So you can hedge your bets if you like. Maybe you don't want to stop going to church. Go to church. Just remember that there's no such thing as a God that you have to fear. There's no such thing as an anthropomorphic God. Instead, God is what Jesus said God was, which is loving spirit. And that's all you really need to know to be happy. So start there. And I found I couldn't do both, but you may be more advanced than I was when I started. Believe me, before I started on this journey, you wouldn't have liked me. I had a lot of the negative sort of emotions and feelings that come from the negativity that is all around us. I'm telling you, because I did it, you can do it too. You can surmount all of it. So I'll talk a bit later, if there's time, about the things that Jesus said about how we should be getting rid of the Old Testament, following his teachings, and bringing the kingdom of God on earth in a way which I hope won't put you off if you're not a Christian, because it turns out Christianity doesn't matter a fig. It doesn't matter what your religion is. You can do exactly the same things because it's all based on what I think of as the physics of the mind. The physics of the mind is what allows you to grow rapidly, and it was designed for that purpose. This is all, I think, extremely exciting. And as I think you know, this is something that Max Planck told us way back in 1931. Now, Max Planck got the 1918 Nobel Prize as the father of quantum mechanics. He's a big deal scientist. And he founded God, actually. He said back in 1931, I regard consciousness as fundamental. I regard matter as derivative from consciousness. We cannot get behind consciousness. Everything that we talk about, everything that we regard as existing, postulates consciousness. He said that in 1931. To this day, physicists ignore it. In fact, I've had conversations with physicists who hate the very thought of it, because it, if it's true, then it negates everything that they're trying to talk about. So let's stick with Dr. Planck. Let's stick with the people who have come from, frankly, the wonderful lives they're having in the afterlife to tell us the truth. Let's stick with Jesus. Let's stick with what is actually true and do it without fear, because fear is the very negative thing that we are most fighting. So, again, this is Roberta Grimes. This is Seek Reality. We've got much more to talk about. What I'm trying to do is tell you things which your ancestors and mine could not possibly have known. In fact, until this century, nobody really understood all of this. But it's true. We know now why you came, and we know now how you can get an A+ in this lifetime, even if you are, you know, as old as I am. I'm in my early 70s. This is the reason why we come to Earth. We come to Earth with a lesson plan. Really, it's not so much a lesson plan as it is a plan for which are the horrible things we want to have happen to us. And the reason is simple. We need the negativity that is rampant on Earth in order for us to be able to push against it. Basically, we have to be able to choose not love in order to be able to choose love. So if anyone tells you we don't have free will, and there are reasons why people would say that, because scientists have concluded don't have free will, but that's a whole other topic, which I'll also try to touch on if we have time today. But in fact, we do have free will, and the reason is so we can choose love. Just always remember, whatever the question, love is always the answer. The base consciousness, which Dr. Max Planck called the one source, the mind, he called the matrix of all matter. Indeed, that's exactly right. God does not look like a man, doesn't have any human characteristics, has no human failings, but there is indeed a source energy that's infinitely powerful, and it brings forth the universe continuously. There is no such thing as time in reality. That's another of the illusions that we enter when we come to Earth. And without time, that source is always, always, always creating. So, our minds are part of that universal mind. They're vast, and they're not like little dots separate. We are all part of that one mind in the most organic possible way. So we are part of that creative force. We are also are creating what's around us. That's a whole other topic, and it's one I don't perfectly understand, but that's how much I do know. Now, that universal mind has... It's an energy, and energy is vibrations, as we know. That's the very nature of it. The universal mind exists in a possible range of vibrations from the lowest, which is every ishy emotion. Fear is what we think of it as, that core fear, which has all around it fear in different forms, anger, grief, all kinds of unhappiness and depression and all that, all those negative ishy emotions. That's the bottom of the vibrations of consciousness. The highest vibration is perfect, perfect love. Now, love, this isn't the kind of love you have for your individual family members. And Jesus made that point too. He said, if all you love is, you know, your family, what merit is there in that for you? Even the tax collectors do that. No, he said that true love is what I think of it as consciousness's affinity for itself. And what I've discovered is that when you clear away all the negativity, it happens naturally. It is our natural state. It is our birthright to love everyone that perfectly. In A Course in Miracles, again, the same thing. You get no merit for loving your family, because they actually call it special loves when you only love your family. And they say it's as bad as special hates, believe it or not. I found that a little hard to imagine when I had little children. But I've come to understand when you raise your spiritual vibration enough, it isn't that you love your family less. It's that the love you have for your family is the love you have for all humankind. It's as if that love spreads and grows. It can become infinite in size. Now, okay, so range of vibrations. Lowest is fear, highest is perfect love. And the beauty of all of this is that it's going on all around us all the time, and we can choose love. And the more we choose love, the better off we are. But we've got to have that negative vibration. And many people choose transcendent moments. You know, people like this. Oh, I love that music. Oh, I'm meditating and I achieve this or that. But that's not enough, because transcendent moments don't change our core vibration. The core of spiritual love seems to be, spiritual growth rather, seems to be raising the vibration set point of our personal consciousness away from fear and toward more perfect love. So it's not about just experiencing some ecstatic highs. It's about being at a level that's below the, you know, the manic ecstatic level, but it's being there all the time. Imagine, you know, think of the Hallelujah chorus or whatever music lifts your heart. Not quite that high, but certainly as satisfying is getting your mind to the point where you always feel good, happy, loving. You're never, ever harmed by any kind of fear or negativity, no matter what's going on around you. So, I mean, I just, yesterday, by coincidence, I heard from someone who has been having a wonderful, wonderful success with doing Kundalini yoga, which is just a kind of yoga. And it's helped her so much that when she's in the process, she sometimes actually sees her loved ones that are dead appear before her. And I was thinking, wow, that's great for you. And then I came to the place where she says that, but she kept fearing that these were actually demons and not her loved ones. And so she stopped doing the Kundalini yoga, and she asked me what I thought she should do. Now, I don't meditate. I don't do yoga. I have no patience with any of those things, and I've never even wanted to do them. So I thought about it for a while after I read her email before I gave her my answer. And as the more I thought about it, I realized that this is a primary problem for people who are seekers, because all of these human-made spiritual practices, it's as if they've discovered a trick that your mind can do. And like yoga, like meditation, like all of those things, they don't raise your set point. They don't make it so you're always living in the Zen or in the whatever. They just give you that experience. When you're off that experience, ultimately, you've got the same problem. Our core set point when we come here is fear. We've got to get rid of that fear. So I told her eventually that I thought she should do, frankly, the same thing I think all of us should be doing now. The reason we even enter Earth lives in the first place, she should begin a daily spiritual practice that will raise her core vibrational set point, where she is spiritually while she's at rest all the time, and she'll never get below that. And as you raise your vibration high enough, it becomes impossible for you to be afraid, even when you're not in the middle of whatever your practice is. I don't know of anything other than the teachings of Jesus that will do this for you. You know, and again, the New Age movement of the 60s and 70s really opened us up, and a number of Eastern religious ideas have remained in vogue to this day, like meditation, yoga, chanting, you know, breath work, following a guru or a yogi, all kinds of things. I hear from people who really, really are trying hard this way. And some people I know have, you know, swear by doing some of these things. But, you know, spiritual growth is natural for you. It shouldn't be hard. It should fit into your life easily. And the part of the problem is, too, that for Westerners, a lot of that stuff is foreign and off-putting. You know, we can't really understand it. It doesn't fit with anything that we know. And it takes time, which we don't have. And there's another problem, too, because for people raised in Christianity, that's just the notion of stepping into a whole foreign world, like Buddhism or Hinduism or any Eastern religion, it can be off-putting in itself. You know, what if Jesus doesn't like our doing that? What if we're going to hell? I mean, a lot of people find it hard to do what until recently we thought were the things you had to do. But, you know, you're not going to raise your consciousness set point if whatever you're trying to do in order to accomplish that keeps freaking you out, or making you afraid. No, the gospel teachings remain the easiest way to do it. The gospel teachings are simple and they're effective. They fit naturally into your life. You don't have to take time off, do a long weekend with a guru or anything. You just simply practice certain specific things. Again, my book on this is The Fun of Growing Forever. It's the tale of how I began to try. Because someone challenged me, for heaven's sake. I was giving a talk in the fall of 2010, and someone said, well, so do they work? I said, what? He said, the teachings, do they work? I told him that, of course, they did. Then I thought, you know, before I say that again, I think I'd better figure out if they do. So that was why I spent my summer in 2011 trying to figure out how to apply those teachings for real. And that process is in The Fun of Growing Forever. And I'll tell you where I arrived. I found that I could raise my set point. I became a much happier and a much nicer and a much more enjoyable to be around person than I ever thought would be possible. You can do this. It's not even hard. It's easy. And the reasons why these teachings work so well are actually, in retrospect, pretty simple. We expect things that are tremendous and great and the purpose of human life to be something complex or hard to understand. No, it's really, really simple. We're going to take another break, and when we come back, I'm going to talk to you more about what I did and what you can do too, and I don't care how old you are. You can ace this lifetime and never come back. Now we're going to talk about what's going on when we actually raise our spiritual vibration. As I've said, researchers often refer to the earth as a spiritual school, but it's really not a school so much as it's a gym. It's a spiritual gym. We come here to work out, and we want to work out hard, because when we're in the afterlife levels, there's no negativity, and we see people and we know people who are much more advanced spiritually than we are, because there's no negativity. It's really, being in the afterlife levels forever is like lying around on a spiritual couch. It's great and it's fun and we love it, but we start to want to go higher, because the higher our vibration is, the more fun we can have. And, you know, fun is what it's all about. So once again, we start to plan a lifetime on Earth. We plan it with someone who will be our primary guide, sometimes with other guides who are going to come and go in our lives, with the people who will be important, like our spouse and children. Often we incarnate in groups for a number of reasons, but it's just simply easier for us to work with people that we've worked with before. But ultimately, we're coming to a spiritual gym. Once we get the lesson plan or the workout plan written, we strip down to what we think is about less than 5% of our vast eternal minds. We leave the rest behind, but basically we put on a mind t-shirt and shorts. We're going to get on those machines and we're going to do whatever we have to do to grow spiritually. And we have chosen these machines. I've had so many people say, I never would have chosen to have my child die. I never would have chosen this or that. I never would have chosen that awful man I finally got rid of. Yes, we chose it all. And very often, incidentally, that awful man you're trying to, or woman you're trying to get rid of, is someone from another lifetime who's actually a good eternal friend and who has offered to be this negative person in your life so you could have someone to push against. It's all so we can grow spiritually. And the reason it works so well is simply this, that 5% or less of our mind that we strip down to is designed. It's designed for easy and rapid spiritual learning. Our minds have three very useful traits in particular. These are our earth minds, not our eternal minds. First, our earth minds are very lazy. They casually flow along like water. They're not trying to do anything complicated. They just try to find the easiest course and take it. And that's part of the problem, because once we, after we're born and we're in the, living in the deep negativity of here, it's a shock for us. And we're sort of hyper reactive even into our early adulthood. So we teach those lazy minds that a lot of things are bad. We teach them to get upset in traffic. We teach them that our parents are terrible, our boss this or that. So we teach them to be hyper reactive. And that is all stuff they have to unlearn. And so it's very, very lucky that, yes, they are sort of lazy. They'll take the easiest path. But the second trait they have is that they adapt easily. So if you've been someone who has been terrible, as I was, in traffic all your life, it is very easy for you just to stop reacting negatively to traffic. And this is quickly something your mind will learn. It will stop feeding you things to be upset about. In whatever area of your life, you easily get upset because it adapts very easily to those changed circumstances. I think of it as rearranging the rocks in the stream. It'll flow around the new rocks just as well as it flowed around the old ones. The third wonderful characteristic that our earth minds have is that they operate largely by habit. Now think about this. If you didn't have a mind that operated largely by habit, I learned habits, every time you came to a door, you'd have to figure out again how to turn the knob or how to make the door open. Is there a knob? Oh my goodness, look at that. There's a knob. It would be a new discovery each time. Driving a car, you'd have to have a set of notes with you to make sure you remember to do all the things you have to do. So much of what we do in these earth lives is entirely automatic. Our earth minds are designed to do that and to do it well. Our earth minds are lazy, adaptable, and ruled by habits. We use that to our great benefit when we decide that it's time for us to grow spiritually. So again, what is spiritual growth anyway? Love is the highest consciousness vibration. Spiritual growth, therefore, is in its essence the achievement of an ever greater capacity to love perfectly. As Jesus says, you are to be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect. That's Matthew 5:48. Spiritual growth means living in love all the time, no matter what happens. There's a card you can buy and hang on the wall, or, you know, a little placard you can buy that says, love is the fragrance the violet sheds when it's trod on. Well, in a way, that's kind of what it is. That it is our responsibility. If we want to really ace this lifetime and not have to come back and keep coming till we get it right, it's our responsibility and our joy to get to the point where no matter what people do to us, we don't blame them, we forgive them, and we love them. Now, I'm not saying that it's easy to get your mind around that, but it is easy to accomplish it. So surprisingly easy. It turns out that forgiveness is the key to ever more perfect love. Jesus talks a lot about forgiveness. He says, do not judge so that you will not be judged. For in the way you judge, you will be judged. And by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you. That's Matthew 7:1-2. That's exactly right, actually, because we will be our own afterlife judge. And for sure, if we have trouble forgiving people here, we won't be able to forgive ourselves very easily. And we can get into a lot of unfortunate situations after death if we haven't learned how to love, how to forgive. So even if you're not, okay, I'll come back a few more times, you don't want to end up judging yourself so harshly for the things you did here that you put yourself into the utter darkness. Learning to forgive is not that hard, and it's probably the kindest thing you can do for yourself while you're here. Jesus said, do not resist an evil person, but whoever slaps you on your right cheek, turn the other to him also. If anyone wants to sue you and take your shirt, let him have your coat also. Whoever forces you to go 1 mile, go with him too. Matthew 5:39-41. He says, but love your enemies and do good and lend, expecting nothing in return. And your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High. For he himself is kind to ungrateful and evil men. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Luke 6:35-36. That's actually true. If you shed kindness, shed love like that violet sheds fragrance when it's crushed, your reward is going to be greater than you can possibly imagine, because you will be sons of the Most High. You will go so high in the afterlife levels where it is so far beyond beautiful and there's so much more than everything to do. It's impossible even to express what your reward will be. So as you're doing it, and not with gritted teeth, but with an open heart, as you're forgiving and as you're loving, just remember, you are reinforcing those spiritual muscles that are going to be what will take you to the height. So, okay, I was learning all of this. I was already pretty versed in the teachings of Jesus. And yeah, I learned to forgive, then learned to love. So how hard could that be, all of that? I thought I could just ace it out. Learning to live perfect love perfectly and forgive completely. I was already pretty loving. So in June of 2011, I began to give it the old college try. It's a lot harder in the beginning than it looks, because our instinct is to wait for something to go wrong and then forgive it. And what I found very quickly was that if forgiving something after it has already happened and you're already upset is really almost impossible. You have to accept what just happened, that so-and-so cut me off again in traffic, my awful husband for the millionth time forgot to do this or that. Whatever it is, you're already upset. And what you have to do then is what I think of as bespoke forgiveness. Just like a bespoke suit is made tailored to you, you have to tailor a whole different act to what just happened and basically wrestle it down, all your negative emotions, which is more negativity, of course, injected. You wrestle those negative emotions down and try to kill them. It's painful, it's infuriating, and it doesn't work very well. And within days, I had to give it up. I woke up one morning and you know, if you're working with your primary guides, or any spirit guides, you know what I'm about to say. I knew the answer to what to do next. And what I began to do was this. Whenever I thought something was about to happen, you start to know you're going to get ticked about something. Before I let myself really realize it, I began to do what I call provenient forgiveness. I would immediately, using my whole arms, gather up everything that was bothering me and I would form it into a ball with my hands in the air in front of me, even if I was with other people around. I didn't care if they looked at me funny. I would make that nice tight ball, and if there are people in the ball, you stick them in there too. If you know you're partly responsible, you jump in there yourself and you make it a nice tight ball, and then with both hands, you push it away. And you say aloud, I love you, I bless you, I forgive, and I release. In the very beginning, I had to do it more than once. Very quickly, though, within a week, I realized I only had to do it once, and it short-circuited everything. And you know exactly what I did. I basically used my lazy, habitual mind to form a new set of habits. And the new habit was, okay, something bad has happened. I'm not going to react to it because it doesn't matter. This happens so quickly. Within 6 weeks, something happened. Someone said something or did something that I can't even remember what it was now, that would have driven me up the wall, but I barely noticed it. And again, just briefly, it's you use your arms to gather up whatever's starting to bug you before it really, really gets bad. Make a nice tight ball with it, including putting people in there. And then you push it away with both hands and as you say aloud, I love you, I bless you, I forgive, and I release. I love you, I bless you, I forgive, and I release. It works like a clock. So one day, it was about probably six weeks into my doing this, and I wish I could remember what it was, but I know it was in a restaurant, so it wasn't driving, but something happened that before would have upset me very much. It was something somebody started to talk to me about or something like that, and what astonished me was I was hearing it, but it didn't matter to me now. I came to think that what had happened was that I had been so reactive before, we all are, and very sort of involved in protecting myself, there were levers on the outside that people could pull or push or whatever that would activate my negativity on the inside. And what it really felt like was that all those levers had been disconnected on the inside. So people would still try to activate them. You can't keep people from doing what they're going to do. But they would have no effect. I was peaceful on the inside, as I never in my life had been peaceful. And I became drunk on that feeling. And I don't think I had to make more than 2 or 3 more forgiveness balls because I got it. And my mind was already accepting what the new instructions I'd given to it and trying not to react to anything. And that's the start of a whole new life, a whole new life. I have to tell you, I know some people who are obviously extremely advanced spiritually. There are a lot of people who have come back who normally wouldn't take another lifetime because we're all working together to raise the spiritual vibration of this planet. But I know these people, and I'll tell you how to recognize them. They share some essential characteristics. They're all gentle by nature, polite, respectful of others. They seem very thoughtful. Often they seem deep. They're quiet, and they're so adverse to negativity of any kind, they won't fight negativity. Instead, they always withdraw from it. Sometimes it will be, you'll think, well, they should have, you know, responded to this person said something terrible. They withdraw. Because to respond to negativity that way, to try to, you know, assert yourself over the negativity only makes negativity worse in your mind. And they protect their minds. And now I protect mine so well that I just had something very negative happen in my life. Had nothing to do with me, but I got pulled into it. I withdrew from the whole situation. I will not be in any situation now that affects me that way. Jesus talked about the characteristics of spiritually advanced people in the Beatitudes, for example. He said, blessed are the gentle, for they shall inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the sons of God. Blessed are those who have been persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. That's some of the Beatitudes, Matthew 5:5-10. Jesus also says some other things. Whoever exalts himself shall be humbled. Whoever humbles himself shall be exalted. Matthew 23:12. That's another characteristic of them. They don't push forward. No matter how important we know they really are, they're humble all the time. Jesus says, the one who is least among all of you, this is the one who is great. Luke 9:48. That's how they act. They're humble all the time. They act as if they're the least, but they are the greatest. And he says, whoever does not receive the kingdom of God like a child will not enter it at all. Mark 10:15. He's not talking about going to heaven. We all go to the same afterlife. But what he's saying is, if what you want is this peace that passes all understanding, if you want to live in the kingdom of God, even when you're on earth, you have to become as meek and humble as a child. So in the end, spiritual growth is a simple mechanical process, and it happens on the inside. It happens because you've taken advantage of your earth mind's learning traits. Your mind is lazy, adaptable, and ruled by habits, and you have made forgiveness and joy your mind's new set of habits. And it turns out to be really amazingly self-reinforcing. The longer you maintain it, the happier you become. So how does it feel? It feels like peace. Whatever is going on around you, nothing really can affect you because peace is always reigning within. It feels like a tranquil, deep-seated joy. It's happiness beyond what I can express. And the most astonishing thing I noticed when I finally got rid of all those stupid automatic responses to negative triggers that, frankly, I had taught my mind that those things were important, but they never were important at all. And the first thing I realized when I got past all of that was that now I was looking at everybody else with love, even strangers on the street. Love had become my new set point, and I didn't have to really even think about being that, doing that. I mean, if you've ever been in love, I mean, not talking about the giddiness, but more the sense of infinite preciousness that surrounds your beloved, imagine having that kind of feeling about everyone around you, even perfect strangers all the time, even people who are mean to you. They're not nice. Imagine having that feeling all the time, and then combine that love you have for others with a certainty that you yourself are so perfectly loved that nothing ever, ever can harm you. Your life is eternal, and underneath are the everlasting arms. Put all of that together. That's how spiritual growth really feels. Imagine, can you imagine feeling any happier than that? I mean, who wouldn't want that? Who hasn't been seeking that for the whole of our lives, that special place where we are safe no matter what? I mean, in a sense, it's like being in your parents' arms, but you're really in God's arms. And it's easy to achieve. It didn't take me a whole year to do all of that. I came up with some love tricks too. One of them, which was fun, I had a grandson who was in kindergarten. And of course, you volunteer because that's what you do. And when I was first doing this, I thought, I wonder if I can, because you walk in through the room to do your volunteer stint for an hour, of course, every week. And you see a halo around one child. That was my grandson, my precious, precious grandson. And I thought, that doesn't seem right. I should be loving everybody just as much. So I experimented with spreading that halo to every child in that room. And it didn't take me more than 3 or 4 tries. When I walked in one day and they all were wearing the same halo, I'm serious about this. It really happened. I was loving all of those beautiful little children just as much as I loved my own. I didn't love him any less. I just loved them the same. And it stuck with me. Several years later, he must have been in the 3rd or 4th grade by then, I walked into a store and there was one of those little boys from that class. And it was all I could do to keep from running over to him, hugging him, making sure he was okay. I still loved him as if he were my grandson. Of course, he would have looked at me pretty funny. And so would his mother who was with him. But that's, you have the power to do that once you use forgiveness, which of course, that's the key to getting rid of all of this, using forgiveness to cleanse your mind of negativity. And once you start protecting the love that begins to rise in you naturally and spreading it as far and wide as you can, you are going to be happy like you've never before been happy. Okay, so one of the things you're wondering now, especially if you want to stay a Christian, is what's the problem with Christianity? I'm going to talk a little more about it. I mean, Jesus actually told us not to start a religion. He said, around his teachings, he said, but no one puts a patch of unshrunk cloth on an old garment, for the patch pulls away from the garment and a worse tear results. Nor do people put new wine into old wineskins, where the wineskins burst and the wine pours out and the wineskins are ruined. You don't do that, no. He said, we put new wine into old wine, into fresh wineskins, new wine into fresh wineskins, and both are preserved. That's Matthew 9:16-17. Now, we know he wasn't talking about wine. He was talking about his teachings. He wants us to follow his teachings. At one point he said, why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not do what I say? Luke 6:46. Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven will enter. Matthew 7:21. If you hold to my teachings, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. John 8:31-32. He wants us to question our religion, the religion that we've inherited, and then he wants us to put it aside. He told us to get rid of the whole Old Testament, which is really the problem Christians have. Most of it's with the Old Testament. Someone asked him what was the most important commandment. And he didn't talk about the 10. He said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. The second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets. Matthew 22:37-40. Why is that important? Well, in his day, they called what we call the Old Testament the Law and the Prophets. He said, basically, throw it all away, replace it with God's new law of love. Now, the main problem is that, of course, we're taught to fear God. God will judge us. A good God-fearing man is someone who's a great Christian. And fearing God is a spiritual dead end. You cannot love what you fear. Those are at opposite ends of the pole of consciousness, and you're trying to climb out of fear. So I just think we don't have a choice. We've got to now turn to Jesus and throw away what's not true. Next week, of course, our guest will be Rob Blackburn. I love this man. He's a very, very spiritual but lovely and sunny young man. And he's been working closely with our wonderful friend Craig Hogan for almost a decade to develop himself as a materialization medium. Now, the wonderful thing about Rob is that he's into it, and yet he's totally down to earth. So he'll be able to talk to us. For example, he just came back from the Banyan Center in the United Kingdom. And then here in our wonderful friend Sandra Champlain sat with one of the most prominent living physical mediums, Scott Milligan. So please join us next week and let's hear about that story. That's going to be great. This week, of course, your guest has been your host. If I've raised questions, I'm glad. If you want to ask me questions, you know how to reach me through my website. And all I ask is that you open your mind and heart for your own sake. There is so much that we never even imagined was possible, and now we know the truth. And as Jesus said, the truth really will set you free. Meanwhile, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in our one reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being, and you are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.